Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. Too often we have media coverage only of things that are in the past, events we wish we'd known about, horrible bills that have just become law that we wish we could have spoken out about. Media that is intended for a government of, by, and for the people should let people know what's coming before it's there. So this week's Talk Nation Radio deals with three conventions, three national movements holding their annual conventions, all in the same city, in the middle of the country, at the same time this summer, which seems like an opportunity to maximize real-world engagement with an activist community that is leading the way toward peace and justice in the United States. These are groups that you can participate with long distance, that you can find out about on this program and engage with through the internet, but that you just might consider trying to engage with in person this summer in Madison, Wisconsin. August 1st through 5th, the Student Power Convergence will be there. And August 7th through 11th, both the Democracy Convention and the Veterans for Peace Convention will be happening in Madison, Wisconsin. Anyone can participate in the Democracy Convention. Anyone, veterans or non-veterans, can participate in the Veterans for Peace Convention. And anyone 35 or under can be part of the Student Power Convergence. This is a movement of young people, whether or not you are currently a student. I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Rashawn Bliss. He is an organizer of the Colorado Student Power Alliance and is going to tell us about a national convergence called the Student Power Convergence, scheduled for Madison, Wisconsin from August 1st through 5th. Rashawn Bliss, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
What is the Student Power Convergence?
The National Student Power Convergence is a gathering that started last year, and this is the second one that's coming up this year. The first National Student Power Convergence was a gathering of about 300 student activists from all over the United States. Plus, we were joined by some pretty key organizers from the Quebecois Student Union called ASSE that just recently successfully went on strike for about 6 months to reverse a 75% tuition hike that their government had been proposing. We were also joined by some leaders from the Yo Soy 132 movement in Mexico that was a really powerful student movement down there against political corruption. And we were also joined by people from the Puerto Rican Student Union that has shut down their universities two or three times in the last 4 or 5 years. So it was really an amazing, amazing gathering of a lot of the, and then that was, you know, in addition to a bunch of really awesome organizers from all over the United States, and I was there for that gathering. So it was just a really powerful gathering of a lot of people who are in college or young people who have been doing really awesome work to kind of come together and share our lessons, to connect with each other, which is absolutely a vital part of what the National Student Power Convergence is for, and to try to vision how we can move forward together, how the student movements can sort of cohere and coalesce and move forward on some shared issues, because the recognition is that young people, just by virtue of the education system's normal functioning with the job market and the economy, is just structurally hurting young people. And that is not going to stop until those young people stand up together and take collective action. So the National Student Power Convergence was an event and will be another event to continue to galvanize young people and students who are ready to take action to make sure that our educations are what we need for a 21st century reality that we'll be inheriting, and to try to connect and better reify the relationships and the student power, or the student power movement here in the United States.
It sounds like from the examples, at least from abroad last year, that you're dealing with issues specific to students, including tuition, but also issues affecting the future of everyone on the planet.
Well, I think that, as you said, the environment is obviously something that young people of the millennial generation has to be aware and has to do something, because it's going to be us who are going to see the real beginnings of this climate shift that we're experiencing. I would expect that the huge nationwide fossil fuel divestment campaign that is being spearheaded by a lot of different organizations, but one of the biggest ones is 350.org. There's a number of students all across the country trying to get their universities to divest parts of their investment from fossil fuels, because those things directly are harming the students who are, you know, paying money into this endowment and who are making those universities possible. And that's been a really huge campaign, so we'll probably hear about that. But then I think that one one other thing we're going to be talking about that's absolutely essential is student unionism. It has not been lost on American students that one of the most successful student movements in, you know, recent history just happened last year in Canada because Canadian students have had unions for a decade. You know, that was actually a really big part of the conversation last year, was just the, getting the inspiration and hearing from the leaders that were with us from ASE and CLASE Canada and from Mexico and Puerto Rico, and to understand the power and potential that's unlocked when students have a body that is just for the state, that exists just for the sake of facilitating their collective action, like a union. And so I think that we're going to start to deepen that conversation that we started last year about what would an American student union look like, how would we get there, and who do we need to, you know, start working with to make that a reality, because that is something that, with the student debt crisis, we have 37 million people who owe over $1 trillion in student debt. That is not a problem that can be solved by individual action. It has to be solved by collective action, and a student union would facilitate just that kind of action that we need. So I think we're definitely going to be hearing about that as well. But I also feel like there's probably going to be some discussion about the direction and the sort of feel of the student movement. I know that there's a lot of people who really want young people to go get involved in elections, and electioneering. And it's always constantly, you know, there's a constant supply of young people who need work, and a lot of the sort of electoral machine that exists in our country loves to just kind of grab the young people and lift them up as leaders and say that, you know, because they've been doing this election work, that this is where the student movement is going. But there's also a very real sort of divide in the student movement community, as far as I've been able to see, between people who are really enthusiastic about engaging with elections and people who are really enthusiastic about not engaging with elections. And I think that the role of voter turnout organizations and working on actual, you know, ballot initiatives in the student movement is going to be a point of conversation, because I think we really do need to clarify the appropriate role of working in elections for building movements that are about much more than the ballot box.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to see all the young people with clipboards at election season working day and night to elect the, you know, this person who's not quite as horrendous as this other person, and then they're exhausted, and then they're at home, and then there's nothing happening the day that the people are actually elected and activism should begin. Who can come to the Student Power Convergence? Is it all university students? What about young people who can't afford to be students? What about high school students? Who do you expect to be there, and who can come?
I'm really glad you asked, because that is something we really try to clarify when we talk about the National Student Power Convergence. It is for young people, and that's regardless of whether or not those young people are involved in the actual education system or enrolled in a university or a high school. Because just as you say, there are a lot of young people who would be involved in school, who would be enrolled in classes, but can't because they've been priced out of their educations and their futures. And there are lots of really, really good reasons that young people who aren't students need to be, in many ways, at the center of the discussion of what is to be done about our education system, because the way that the education system works now and the way that student loans are just this oppressive sort of mechanism that's used to control young people, it's completely valid and reasonable for a young person today to refuse to go to college or not want to or not be able to. And we have no intention of excluding them. We really see this this conference as being something for students and young people. But the kind of focus is definitely slanted toward the schooling system of America and what can be done to change that, with the sort of understanding that that's a really powerful place of action for young people. If we can get more power in the university systems, it will mean that that we can change much more of the other parts of society that need to be changed as well from there, or at least initiate those changes, start to begin those changes. So it's open to students, anyone who's currently enrolled, and young people. And I mean, the definition of young is obviously one that flexes depending on where you go and who you are. But I would say, you know, I'd expect to see people under 35 and people who are enrolled in colleges. But we're also going to see a number of high schoolers, because I'm sure, as you know, some of the most exciting work that's being done in terms of fighting back the corporate education reform agenda is at the high school level and being led by people who are under 18 and just doing absolutely amazing work. And there is absolutely no chance that we're going to pass up on the ability to interact with those young people and see and hear what they've been doing and learn how we can better collaborate, because there is definitely a kind of disconnect between high school activism and college activism, because they just kind of have to focus on different issues, affect the different groups, so they end up focusing on different things. But I absolutely see this National Student Power Convergence as a venue where we can try to work together to create some more synergy between what's going on at the university and college level and the K-12 level. Because they're both obviously absolutely indispensable.
It's a wonderful initiative. We've been speaking with Rashawn Bliss. This is the Student Power Convergence coming up August 1st to 5th in Madison, Wisconsin. You can go to studentpower2013.org or facebook.com/studentpower2013. Rashawn, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio the president of the board of the Liberty Tree Foundation, Ben Mansky, who is closely involved in planning the upcoming Democracy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin, August 7th to 11th. Have I got the dates right, Ben?
You do. And David, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. What is the Democracy Convention?
The Democracy Convention is a gathering for the new democracy movement. We have all kinds of movements in the United States that probably listeners are familiar with or are part of: the labor movement, women's movement, student movement, the ecology movement. But until recently, the United States was a little unique in the world in that we did not have a movement for democracy. And the democracy movement is a coming together of many different sectors of society, people with lots of different sets of interests, who share the common problem, which is that we don't have a functioning democracy in the United States.
And looking at the website, which is democracyconvention.org, it looks like it's actually 9 different conventions. How is this organized?
Yeah, the Democracy Convention has a different approach to how we bring people together. We have 9 conferences that are taking place this August in Madison. And each of these conferences are convened by a different coalition of organizations. These conferences represent real work that is ongoing to win democracy in different areas of society. So there is the Constitutional Reform Conference, convened by Move to Amend Coalition, and that will be their national convergence of people who are working to democratize the Constitution. There's the Democratizing Defense Conference with folks from Veterans for Peace and Code Pink. And I know some people you work with, David, will be there. And that is people who are working to build a agenda for our military, for our national defense, that is oriented towards democratizing it, towards putting power in the hands of the people and taking it away from the military-industrial complex. So there are reforms that people are working on there, not only around drones and a robotization of the military, but also proactively to strengthen the National Guard and bring the National Guard home. There's the Earth Democracy Conference, co-convened by the Alliance for Democracy and Green Action, and that's focused on the rights of nature and winning protections for nature and the natural world in our law and our culture. There's the Economic Democracy Conference, the Education for Democracy Conference, Local Democracy Conference, Media Democracy, Race and Democracy, and finally, Representative Democracy Conference. And these conferences do represent ongoing work, and they're an opportunity for people who want to bring the democracy movement forward where people eat, live, pray, play, where we live our lives, where people can come together and either get engaged in real practical reform movements for democracy, and also, if they're already doing that work, to have the discussions so that when we go back to our communities, we can be more effective as advocates for democracy. So the vision for the Democracy Convention is that when pro-democracy campaigners from across the United States come together on an ongoing basis, and we are able to find the connection between our work, as we can in Madison this August, that the democracy movement, the broader movement, becomes more real. A democracy movement doesn't come into being simply because there is a mass uprising in Wisconsin or on Wall Street. A democracy movement certainly doesn't come into being because there's some gathering in Washington, D.C., where people who run big national nonprofits say, we need to have a new type of movement. It can't be built that way. It has to be built from the bottom up, and that's exactly what's happening. And the Democracy Convention, to my knowledge, is the only place in the United States where that movement comes together.
I mean, very much inclined to agree with you. Just to play devil's advocate, people in each of the movements you named, and it's not just people I know who will be there. I will certainly be there, and I'm looking forward to it. Always think that that the people in the other related movements ought to be with them. So I think the environmentalists and those working on the media and on civil liberties ought to be working against the military-industrial complex. But those focused on the environment think that we all should be focused on the environment, and those focused on media think that that has to come first or we can't communicate all the other. So do we end up stronger together, or do we just end up with too many jobs to do?
We definitely end up stronger together, and what all of the work that we do shares in common is the problem of power. The problem that we can be successful, we are successful much of the time in convincing other people in our communities, in our states, that a particular reform is needed and it will be beneficial. And we win some of those fights. We win some of those battles. But the larger problem that we have not even successfully raised is that even when we convince, you know, a large number of people that there's a particular thing that needs to change, the political system and the economic system don't respond. And that's because we, the people, don't truly govern ourselves. I mean, on issue after issue, from trade to media to the environment to health policy to education, vast majorities of Americans are in agreement, yet the policies that we governed by don't reflect those agreements. That's why democracy is a central theme, a place where we can come together, is so useful in building coalitions, because it doesn't necessarily, you're somebody who is, like me, passionately concerned about education. I teach. I come from a family of educators. That's where my passion lies. I see education as something that can be liberatory or repressive, and I want it to be liberatory. I want it to liberate people. If you're somebody like me, you don't have to give up the work that you do in public education in order to participate in a larger movement for democracy at the same time. In fact, we gain by that, because the truth is that we will, and many of us have come to this conclusion, certainly in the education sector, that we will not be successful unless we build a stronger, more powerful movement that can ensure that we have a political system and an economic system that not only supports public education, but that actually supports efforts to make it more democratic and open. And the same is true in almost any other area of work that we're engaged in.
So how can people find out more, get involved, try to be there in Madison, Wisconsin on August 7th? And what will it cost them? How affordable a proposal is this for people? And is there anything people can do who can't physically be there?
democracyconvention.org that folks should do is go there. And there is a fair bit of information already up on the website about the convention. We will be posting information about speakers and workshops, panels and parties, social gatherings as well in the coming weeks. But I can say right now there's going to be an incredible grouping of activists and the people who are both new and also veterans in the movement coming together at the Democracy Convention. In terms of getting there, it's not hard. Madison's not hard to get to. It's in the center of the country. We do have some suggestions about transportation. It's certainly affordable. We don't, unlike many national so-called progressive gatherings, we don't charge hundreds of dollars to register. The convention is, at this point, almost entirely funded through registration, so we do have to take them, but it's $50 is our regular registration. We have a discounted student, low-income, no-income option, and we also allow certainly people to donate to the Democracy Convention, and we urge people, whether they're going or not, to make donations if they're able to, so that we can do this without corporate funding and, frankly, without any foundation funding. For more information about the convention, you can not only go to democracyconvention.org, but if you go to 2011.democracyconvention.org, you can see what happened at the first Democracy Convention 2 years ago. There's lots of media coverage. There's video. It was a very powerful experience for people. I've been involved in organizing a lot of gatherings of people over the years, and I've never gotten such a positive response. And I think, you know, when we surveyed people and asked them about the convention last time, I think the positive response was reflective of the fact that it's very empowering to come together with people who are actually doing things and succeeding and have an agenda, a roadmap for success. not simply resisting the terrible policies that we're occupied by, but actually moving forward on an agenda that can transform the country. And so that's what the opportunity is that the Democracy Convention this time offers to all of us.
It is a wonderful opportunity. I'm looking forward to being there. Ben Mansky is with the Liberty Tree Foundation. Ben, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Yeah, thank you, David.
I am happy to welcome to Talk Nation Radio Doug Rawlings, who is a founding member of Veterans for Peace, one of the best peace organizations I know of. Doug, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks, David.
I wanted to have you on to talk about the upcoming Veterans for Peace convention, Madison, Wisconsin, August 7th to 11th. Which number convention is this now?
This is number 28, actually.
Wow.
We started back in 1985 in Portland, Maine, with maybe about 10 or 12 of us, and now we're anticipating about 300, 350 people attending this year's convention.
I would love to see that the kind of growth that Veterans for Peace has seen as an organization continue. What will the convention involve? What sort of speakers and events?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting convention because it involves not just speakers about various issues of interest to the peace community, but it also involves internal workings of Veterans for Peace. We have our annual business meeting for all members on Saturday, which takes up all Saturday. But surrounding that are a number of workshops and plenaries and guest speakers. We start off with, actually, this year, since Madison is such a vibrant city and a wonderful place to be, we're starting out with, on Tuesday evening, we're joining local folks who hold their annual Hiroshima and Nagasaki Lanterns for Peace event in a park. And then on Wednesday, August 7th, we hold our Board of Directors annual meeting, quarterly meeting, excuse me. That's open to BFP members and whatnot, but it's, as you can well imagine, lightly attended. And then Wednesday evening, we do our annual poetry reading, which includes Veterans for Peace poets as well as invited peace poets from the community, and we're holding that at a room of one's own bookstore in Madison, which is a great place. And then we'll have, you know, a little bit of a reception Wednesday evening, and then Thursday we officially kick off the convention with our 9:30 opening plenary, and we're going to be given the key to the city by Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. We're going to have some Native American drummers, and we got Mike Wiggins from the Bad River Tribe, they've been involved in all kinds of work up there in terms of claiming back their land. David Newby, who's the founder of U.S. Labor Against the War, and a few other speakers, and this is Thursday morning, and that captures the notion of why we chose Madison, which is we're really interested in the labor movement. We're interested in bringing veterans, to network people involved in the labor movement and vice versa. We're interested in bringing as many people on board as possible who can hear veterans' voices and understand that, you know, our concerns, of course, we want to abolish war, but our concerns go beyond that as well throughout the community. So that's going to capture Thursday morning. We're going to have a series of workshops starting Thursday afternoon. One of the workshops is by the scholar and eminent peace activist David Swanson. And then we're going to go into Thursday evening for our keynote speaker. It's going to be Nick Turse, who's the author of the book Kill Everything That Moves, about atrocities in Vietnam. And this is a very controversial speaker and book because he's really touched some sore points, and his work that I've heard really resonate with people who are involved in the Vietnam War, myself being one of them. We're also going to have John Peck and John Kinsman there Thursday evening talking about family farm defenders. And running throughout the convention, we're going to have a series of films being shown at noon and in the evening after the plenaries. And then on Friday, we'll start the day off with a series of workshops. And we're going to have four sessions of workshops on Thursday and Friday with seven concurrent workshops going each for 90 minutes each. And then we're going to have two plenaries Friday afternoon. One is going to be held by Veterans for Peace board members discussing the strategic plan that we've been developing over the last year and sharing with our members. But in the second part of the afternoon, the second plenary is going to be with Diane Wilson, the environmental activist, Kathy Kelly, the anti-war activist, and Brian Wilson, the anti-war activist and most famous author of Blood on the Tracks. And so that's going to be Friday afternoon. Friday evening, we're going to have Kathy Kelly come back and be a keynote speaker at our banquet, which our traditional annual banquet. And she's going to be joined by Matt Rothschild, who's the editor of the Progressive Magazine. And we'll have some music involved in that, too. And then Saturday will be the all-day business meeting, and we'll finish that off in the late afternoon with a peace parade through the streets of Madison led by the Raging Grannies, the Ford Marching Band, and the Solidarity Sing-Along Troupe. And then Saturday night, we're off to University of Wisconsin, where we're going to have Paul Chappelle, a young Iraq War veteran, West Point graduate, peace activist, author of a number of books on peace activism. He's going to be our keynote speaker. And then we're going to have a rousing band finish off Saturday night. And then finally, on Sunday morning, we're going to be gathering at a senior center to recognize the work of Lincoln Groffs, one of our preeminent CFP members, who's in his early 90s. I hope he doesn't mind me making that statement, but is as active and as involved as you would imagine. He's going to be discussing his work, his lifelong work, opposed to nuclear weapons.
Listeners of Talk Nation Radio will be familiar with Paul Chappelle and Nick Turse and some of these other speakers, and I hope we'll want to hear them in person. I assume that veterans around the country who are interested, and perhaps non-veterans as well, can get to Madison and attend this convention if they're so inclined.
Absolutely, yeah. We usually, last year our convention was in Miami, and it had a Latin American theme, and we had members from all over the country, and that's traditionally what happens. When we say we have a membership of about 4,500, and we usually get about 350 members attending these conventions. They come from all over the country, and the workshop presenters are coming from all over the country. So, yeah, we anticipate that. We anticipate, we hope, local Madison peace activists who want to engage in a dialogue with us would be wonderful. We want to learn from them as well as they can perhaps learn something from us. So we open up a lot of the activities to folks. And people can register by going to veteransforpeace.org, our website. You can register for the entire convention, or you can attend a day of workshops or evening events and whatever. We separate those out and you can pay separately for those. So we've tried to keep the cost reasonable. We're trying to offer alternative housing as much as possible. Most of the convention will be held in the Concourse Hotel in downtown Madison, where many of our members will be staying, but we also offer housing for those who can't afford to stay at the concourse. So we welcome lots of people who want to attend. They have to let us know, of course, because the space is limited. We'd love to engage in dialogue with many folks.
So go to veteransforpeace.org. Will decisions be being made at this convention about projects that Veterans for Peace will be working on in the coming year?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Yeah, during our business meeting on Saturday, we traditionally hold discussion of people apply and present resolutions that are binding resolutions to the organization as well as bylaw amendments. And we have a conversation about those resolutions and amendments. And then we started this last year, and then we're doing voting on the resolution amendments by email.
So veterans who want to get involved in the direction that the best veterans group and one of the best peace groups I'm aware of is taking should be in Madison. There are a couple of other events happening, the Student Power Convergence and the Democracy Convention that I think is overlapping with the Veterans for Peace Convention.
We'd be very interested to see if we could coordinate our workshops with other conventions going on, as well as perhaps joining forces in the Saturday evening social event. But again, if people are there or in Madison for those other events and they want to join us for our evening presentations or any of the workshops or anything, actually, they're welcome to do that. We'd love the idea of cross-fertilization.
Doug Rawlings is with Veterans for Peace. The website is veteransforpeace.org. Doug, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks very much, David.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Until next time.